The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. Today, we are going to talk to Phoebe Lapine. Phoebe has a new book coming out this May. It's called The Wellness Project, and it's about her journey of trying to marry food with life. In fact, what we really want to talk to her about today is how to do right by your body without giving up your life. Welcome, Phoebe.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, we are thrilled to have you on, and I'm laughing a little bit because I just interviewed a guest who sort of made it mandatory that everyone go gluten-free, especially if you have an autoimmune disease. And I'm looking at your bio here, and it says very clearly that you're a gluten-free chef. So that's very timely that you're coming on to talk to us about food. But, you know, as much as I work with patients, all kinds of patients, and gluten does come up, and it's so much a part of our stories in terms of why we got sick or why we ended up with a particular diagnosis, I think the hardest part, you know, I can deliver the information to a patient, but the hardest part is for that person to then run with it and be able to put it into place. And I remember one of my biggest flubs as a physician was thinking very casually telling a patient to go gluten-free was going to be okay, only to find that patient like collapsed in my room in tears, not knowing really how to navigate that whole territory. So I obviously have matured since then, and I know how to handle the subject a little bit better. But this sounds like a topic near and dear to your heart and something that you've had to deal with. So tell us a little bit about your journey and then kind of what led to the book and even this entire platform that you're building to help people understand how to navigate the world of food without feeling essentially deprived.
Yes, and I will say one of the reasons why I wanted to share my story in the first place is because I was definitely that person in the doctor's office hysterically crying when I was told that I couldn't eat gluten and had to basically turn my life upside down. But I'll back up from there because there's a whole 7 years that kind of led me to reevaluate my full approach to health and take on a quote-unquote wellness project, which I talk about in my book. But I'll rewind back to when I was 22, so almost a decade ago, and I was diagnosed by just my regular childhood physician with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And at the time, I had no idea what an autoimmune disease was. I didn't even know what a thyroid was. And neither of those things were really explained to me. She, you know, just said it was totally normal to have this diagnosis, you know, at some point in your 20s, very common for women of my age, and very treatable, obviously, with Synthroid, just taking this synthetic pill for the rest of my life. And I was lucky because I actually grew up in a household with a mother who was an early adopter of the organic movement and was really into homeopathy and had given me, you know, many little white balls that dissolved under my tongue over the years. And so, yeah, you know,
I know those white balls. Yes. My kids know the names of those white balls too.
Totally. And, you know, as a hyperactive child, she gave me melatonin and catnip and valerian root drops. Not that anyone gives their child Ambien, but that was her special cocktail. So anyway, for whatever reason, I was on birth control at the time and taken, you know, plenty of Z-Pak, what have you. It wasn't anti-medication, but the idea of being dependent on something for the rest of my life just wasn't something that I wanted to sign up for, which was a great instinct in hindsight. However, I was not mature enough at the time to actually investigate what other ways of treatment might be. So because I wasn't actually experiencing that many symptoms at the time, I just left her office and pretended like the conversation never happened and went on living my life. And coincidentally, in those years was actually when I left my corporate job to pursue a career in food. And that career in food had nothing to do with health at the time. It was just cooking for 20-somethings in small apartment kitchens. I had started a food blog on that subject and then gotten a cookbook deal and so took on a million other odd food jobs just to make ends meet as I was writing the book. And, you know, it's a hard business to be in. First of all, it's very physical. And, you know, I think anyone working in the gig economy is just going full steam ahead, just pressuring the adrenals.
So,
battle, hustle.
Absolutely. And at this point, you're still not really, you're in food, but not necessarily food as medicine or food as health, right? You're just really in food.
Yeah.
Okay. Just, okay. Interesting.
I was at food as a form of nourishment, I'd say, emotionally, but no, I wasn't thinking at all in terms of nutrition. I was making a lot of, you know, of childhood favorite, the mac and cheeses of the world that were, you know, I'm a big believer that anything homemade is better than what you're eating out at restaurants. But, yeah, I certainly did not have that outlook at the time. Even though I was raised on millet and quinoa. So before my time on some of those niche ingredients, but anyway, long story short, that's obviously when my health really started to nosedive. A lot of the symptoms that you are well aware of with Hashimoto's came to roost. The one that was the biggest impediment to my daily life and obviously my vocation was, of course, my digestion was just refusing to behave. And I considered my stomach, you know, a very cherished colleague of mine. So being in the fetal position after every time I ate was really not a life that I want to continue living. And then, of course, it was also like had insomnia, was waking up with night sweats. I was actually someone who lost weight with Hashimoto's, partially because my gut was just in such terrible shape. I wasn't absorbing any nutrients. And I had to stop exercising because I was just too exhausted all the time and would get a horrible pelvic cramp, you know, within half a block. So anyway, I could go on and on, but eventually I ended up in the office as someone with a more holistic approach who put me on an elimination diet and did some blood work. And basically, you know, it was gluten was pointed to as the culprit. So I will say that it was not explained to me, even in his office, the connection between Hashimoto's and gluten. So we can get into that, but I'm sure you've talked about that on the podcast before.
Yeah, we've talked a lot. In fact, we've talked a lot about that particular connection, but, you know, a lot of our listeners know, and they've heard me say, they've heard other experts say, it sounds like you're in that category too, where gluten, especially for a thyroid condition, is an absolute no-no, and there are multiple reasons for that. But, you know, I've even had some experts now say gluten for any autoimmune condition is a no-no, and it just triggers inflammation. So it sounds like you're in this world of understanding the role of gluten in your disease, you're working in food. How do you make the transition from maybe to a more holistic approach to food, or how do you make that transition to going gluten-free? Did you find that difficult, challenging, easy? What could you tell somebody out there listening who maybe just got the word from me or from one of my colleagues that they need to be gluten-free and they're having a minor panic attack? What would you tell them?
Yeah, so I mean, I found it extremely difficult at the time. And, you know, I've seen other holistic practitioners since who've given me a much longer laundry list of dietary labor and lifestyle labor to try and adapt. But even just that one change for someone particularly who obviously like food was life, food was career.
Good point.
I was just freaked out by the fact that I wasn't going, you know, that it was going to limit the jobs I could do. But I do emphasize, I mean, having it not explained to me the actual connection between the inflammatory response of my body to the gluten, to the thyroid protein, and that being a chicken or the egg situation, it didn't get me on board with gluten as a complete non-negotiable no-no in my diet. I just kind of went on living my life, you know, taking it out slowly, but also saying to myself, oh, well, you know, worst comes to worst, I have a stomach ache, you know, if if I break the rules or what have you. So it actually took me many more years until I actually did my project and did more of my own due diligence and research to really realize its broader role. And for me, just having that knowledge and having that full explanation was one of the things that helped me truly commit to it. But I'd say in terms of the kitchen, I mean, this was 6 years ago, so it's a lot easier now. Not to poo-poo anyone else who's having the same kind of grief around the gluten situation, because that I obviously understand. But I think maybe one of the pitfalls now is that it's too easy. There are too many of these gluten-free products, baked goods, what have you, that people, I think, will not end up necessarily feeling the full benefits because they're still eating a lot of processed junk. So I would say, I mean, like any dietary restriction, it is kind of an impetus to get into the kitchen and to start learning how to cook and start learning how to make it something enjoyable. And I know that's easier said than done, but I'm a big believer in batch cooking on weekends, setting aside a short period of time, a few hours, and really setting yourself up for success for the week ahead. And I think if you can do it on weekends, when you really have time to enjoy it and they're not running home from work and staring at an empty fridge while your stomach is moaning and potentially kids are moaning for food,
yes,
that's when you can really, you know, kind of hone those skills and also use food start to finish. Because I know a lot of beginner cooks feel really wasteful and feel that sometimes cooking is more expensive when they first start because they have to buy so many ingredients and don't necessarily know how to use them from start to finish or don't necessarily select recipes that use things start to finish.
Well, you're talking right now to I'm a champion batch cooker, if I can't say so myself, but we're all about the weekend. We're all about the Sunday, Wednesday routine. We prep like a bunch of meals on Sunday and then probably come in one more time on Wednesday. And then as I joke, and I've joked before, I've told everybody the kitchen's closed from Friday through Sunday until it reopens Sunday again. So I'm all about batch cooking. But you know what I did notice even adopting that, and that's where, again, trying to help our listeners navigate the world of food and sort of harnessing this food giant that it feels like that we're all having to harness. You know, when I put the pressure on myself to do the entire week on Sunday, I would start to get a little bit depressed about Sunday nights. I'd be like, oh my God, I have to get back in the kitchen again, you know, and I'd have this sort of feeling of dread, but breaking it up into like two sessions seemed to help. What have you found when it comes to like prepping food, you know, doing batch cooking, trying to organize food? What has really worked? What do you see work across the board, you know, for yourself and maybe for others that you meet?
I mean, I think it is sometimes more realistic to break it up into two. I mean, it sounds so like school marmish, but I really do think the more you can plan in advance, the better. And menu planning is something, especially like in this day and age with Pinterest and such, that can be really fun. It can be fun if you have a shelf load of cookbooks to do with the whole family, to kind of make that a separate prong, not something that you do the day of, but earlier in the week. And that way also you can look forward to the trying of it. And I think like the more you can break up small things like that, I also recommend you don't have to necessarily do the shopping the same day as you do your actual cooking, but it can help whenever you bring in produce from the outside world to always wash it and just get it kind of into its bare minimum state where you can just like go ahead and cook with it when the time comes. Those little things are always what shave off precious minutes in the kitchen. And then
Well, I was going to say one of my cardinal rules is I will not shop and cook on the same day. Those have to be different days. And rule number two is that everything needs to be chopped, dried, and batched before I even enter the kitchen. You know what I mean? So all that work is done before you even get to the act of cooking, you know, and sometimes that shaves time and helps, you know, helps you to not feel like you're just in the kitchen constantly for 4 hours straight. But I love what you said about getting everybody involved. I think that is such a great idea. Like, you know, have everybody, you know, whether you're a friend group or a family, like have everybody pull a cookbook out and pick a recipe and plan the list. I think that's a fun group activity.
Totally.
So I think that's a great idea.
And I will say,
you know, and what, yeah, go ahead.
I will also say just for the single folks or for those without kids where it's just you and a significant other, I think I've seen, at least in New York City, especially when people are just so overscheduled and have a lot of commitments at night, sometimes people who have done batch cooking have expressed to me that they feel it's actually too overwhelming and they end up feeling wasteful from the batch cooking because they then have these meals that are going to waste in the fridge. And what if, you know, schedules don't align to actually eat them? So, I mean, I think a nice baby step and one where you can just maybe choose one day, and it's a very short time frame of making just maybe two kind of one pan meals of sorts, is just to focus on the brown bag. I think like lunchtime is actually it's a safe base to kind of make those healthier choices and wean yourself onto new dietary habits, because you don't have to focus on really many other people's own habits or tastes or what have you. You can just make a meal for yourself and enjoy it. So I don't know. I think the batch cooking for a brown bag in particular is a good gateway cooking habit.
I love that. So batch cook for not the entire fridge, but for a brown bag. And that way it doesn't feel as overwhelming and you still harness and master your control over food. I think that's an amazing tip. So Phoebe, you know, the Wellness Project itself, I know it was born out of your experience with food, as we've heard, and then your experience with being diagnosed with Hashimoto's and learning that essentially, as I learned, that we really need to be gluten-free to move that conversation forward. How, you know, what is the Wellness Project about? What's it doing? What is your hope, you know, as you've created this? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So the Wellness Project was actually born in the years after going off gluten and taking on a few more changes, but basically just still feeling a little overwhelmed about how to proceed, about what was actually moving the needle, and needing to take a step back and say, okay, like, I'm just not the type of person who's going to be able to turn my life completely upside down, to throw out all the toxic contents of my apartment, replace them all with, you know, unbleached cotton and baking soda. I need to kind of design a curriculum for myself to, you know, climb back up Health Mountain, taking a more scenic route. And the second part of that was also is like the food part. I obviously had the tools to make that a little bit easier for myself, but I found that I was actually getting a little bit too bogged down in just the dietary parameters and not focusing, again, on kind of all of these other prongs of wellness, you know, the products we put on our skin, sleep, hydration. So I just kind of, you know, zeroed out, came up with a list of both my current health challenges / like macro areas to focus on, and decided that I was just going to make one lifestyle change at a time for a year and roughly 1 month for each, and just to be a little bit more type about the whole thing and go step by step with these baby steps. Because I was also, I mean, I'm like a young professional, but at the time I was living in a 400 square foot apartment in Manhattan, and, you know, a lot of these, the amazing thing about the wellness world having mushroomed in the last few years and there being so much more awareness about all of these practices, many of which obviously have been around for centuries. I mean, what's wonderful about it is that there is that awareness, but it can feel overwhelming. And for me, you know, to hear someone recommend like, oh, I should buy a rebounder, like that's so good for my lymphatic system, so good for Hashimoto's. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Like, I didn't really have room for that in my apartment, along with a whole host of other things, like a reverse osmosis water filter. Like, my project was about how do we fit these healthy things into real life, and then also to not just, again, focus on one at a time what was really making a difference, but also what were some of the more qualitative things that were taken away. Like, what did it do to my financial wellness? What did it do to my social wellness? So that's why my philosophy and the things that I set out to investigate over the course of this project was something I call healthy hedonism. And I don't say hedonism as in just like wine and French fries, though it can be to some. Really what hedonism means to me is, what are the things that bring us pleasure? And, you know, that can mean, again, just, you know, feeling the sun on your skin, walking outside, the ability to just share a meal with your family and not be stressed out. So, and, you know, when we add anything healthy or not, the addition means automatically there's less room for something else. So really just like weighing those two. And the beauty of there being so many things out there is that I think we really can these days, you know, figure out where our hard lines are, and where the wiggle room is. And for the wiggle room stuff, really find self-care practices that bring us some sort of enjoyment in addition to the health benefits.
I think that's brilliant because I can be honest with you. I've been doing this for probably, I've had my practice for about 8 or 9 years, studying this stuff for over, you know, a decade or 15 years. But it's interesting, it's exciting to now see so many people in the field and so many people talking about health and wellness and what it means. It's also interesting because I find it to be a little noisy, so to speak. You know, there's like a lot of, you know, do this plan, do that, get this filter, drink this water, do this supplement, do this, do that. And so for me, you know, a personal challenge to myself has been, how do we dial back the noise a little bit? How do we find wellness in a realistic way that is then, you know, where all of us are able to implement it on a daily basis. And still, like you're saying, these things that many people don't talk about, like, you know, as you're doing all these things to be well or to be your best self, are you also financially well? Are you also socially, you know, inclusive and well? Like, where is all this stuff? Because, you know, the other risk of some of this movement is people going to the other extreme, like a rise in what I'm calling orthorexia, where, you know, you've got people that are not eating and they're so particular about what they eat that then they have other health consequences because of that. So, you know, ultimately we're meant to be balanced. We're meant to find joy. You know, we were inundated for 100 years with a lot of processed and junk foods that we now have to unlearn ourselves out of. But until society truly shifts all the way over to where those things are not available, we all have to navigate this territory and I guess get rid of the guilt. So I think you talk about this more in your book, right? In the Wellness Project coming up.
I do. Yes. Fantastic. I mean, I would never became orthorexic, but I could feel myself dipping into an unhealthy mindset where the stress around the healthy choices I was making was defeating the end results.
Yes.
So yeah, it was kind of designing this curriculum for finding balance. And, you know, it wasn't meant to be cumulative. A lot of it ended up being cumulative because, again, I found some joy in it. I found, you know, the research just being compelling on its own was enough sometimes just to cement something like, you know, getting a Walter filter, even though I couldn't necessarily feel, you know, the benefits of not having chlorine in my water right away. But then, you know, it's like kind of going about it in this way was just with the intention to build my intuition like a muscle. So again, you know, I could go forward and drown out some of the noise because there's always going to be more products. There's always going to be new experts mounting soapboxes, new research, and you just kind of have to decide at the end of the day what's right for you. And I totally sympathize with all of my prior physicians and you, because it's really hard to give someone a prescription for their life, because you can't go home with them and hold their hand while they're chopping kale and tell them to do something or not. And especially in such a limited time, I mean, there's only so much of the why you can explain in an hour-long conversation. So that's why I wanted to tell my story. That's why I designed the curriculum the way I did. And it's just my hope that other people can be inspired to take on their own self-experimentation. And I think in going about it slowly, one step at a time, it's going to be more sustainable going forward. And I just think that it's going to be a lot easier in some ways for people to take that first step versus, you know, hearing so much of that noise and maybe deciding it's easier to just do nothing at all.
Fantastic. Well, I hope that we have all learned a little bit from talking to you today. I think the whole concept of healthy hedonism is one that probably needs more attention. I think understanding all dimensions of wellness and health, not just the chemistry and not just, you know, not just all the details of everything that we're seeing out there, is so critical. Your book is out on May 16th. I encourage everybody to pick up a copy and help them to find their own wellness and their own journey towards their best self. Where can they find your book?
Hopefully wherever books are sold, but certainly all the big retailers and Amazon, and I'll share a link with you.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Phoebe, thank you so much for taking some time out today to share your story. Hopefully it motivates even just one listener to dive into the world of mastering food, finding your cures, and really finding your own prescription for wellness. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.